Let's take a quick break and hear from today's show sponsor.
Are you struggling to close deals? Cold outreach can be a slow and brutal process, and in many scenarios, it's just wasting the time of both the buyer and the seller, especially when business owners who are trying to find qualified buyers are using inaccurate and outdated data. But it doesn't have to be this way. With LinkedIn Sales Navigator, your organization can overcome these challenges by leveraging this amazing technology and platform that translates comprehensive, high-quality buyer data into real-time insights and sales. These deeper insights empower sales reps and teams to adopt the habits of top performers, which leads to much better outcomes like building a bigger pipeline with real customers, leading to higher win rates and conversions, and of course, larger deals and paydays all around. We call this deep sales, and LinkedIn has built the first deep sales platform with the next generation of LinkedIn Sales Navigator. Right now, our Millionaire Mindcast family has an amazing opportunity to try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/mindcast. That's linkedin.com/mindcast for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/mindcast and get started.
And when you think about retirement, when you start earlier and you do the right things,
you got to put away less.
You are exactly. There's less pressure. Mm-hmm. But now you look at the people who are like, oh, I'll figure it out later. Kicking the can down the road. I'll figure it out later. Instant gratification now.
Yep.
What's going on, guys? Welcome into another episode of Money Moves. As always, your host, Matty A, my co-host, Mr. Ryan Breedwell.
What's up, y'all?
We love to cover all things stocks, real estate investing, personal finance, and a little sprinkle politics to keep you informed on your wealth building journey. We got a great show for you guys today. There's a lot going on this week.
Tons of stuff.
A lot of good stuff going on this week. We are going to be covering what's going on with the minutes, with inflation data coming out this week. Mm-hmm. We've got some pretty interesting things that have happened over the course of the last week with the solar eclipse, with fundraising campaigns on both sides of the aisle, with gold, with the gas prices.
Yeah.
There's so much to cover in today's episode, so we're not going to waste any time. But I will say this. If you hang with us to the end, I will give you a guaranteed way to become a millionaire. Guaranteed. And I think you're going to like it. So hang around for the end of the episode there. Did you check out the solar eclipse yesterday?
Honestly, I was doing paperwork. Didn't even care.
I'm with you. It was crazy how many people actually planned their whole, not only day, but I know a lot of people traveled to certain parts of the country to go see it. Did you see the news reporter that was like crying on the news when he was watching totality and it was completely covering the sun?
No, I didn't. People
were losing their minds over it.
There was a lot of things like, because there were some earthquakes, people were like, it's the end of the world and blah, 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 blah. Dude, it reminded me of 2012 again.
Yeah.
Remember that? Oh, the world's going to end. Yeah.
I remember in 2000 when...
The computers can't do this.
Everything's going to end.
Fine.
Yeah, we were good.
Same deal.
Don't get me wrong. For those of you that love the eclipse, I heard it was great. I saw a lot of photos.
I saw photos.
Videos,
I thought that was awesome. Like,
that's as good as I needed it to be.
I'm going to say that to me is about how good an eclipse is. Looking at a picture of it at a later time.
There was actually a really cool one. Red Bull did these two planes flying right next to the eclipse that looked really freaking cool. There were some pretty cool people that were obviously all the videos and influencers and Instagrammers and all the people that were out there taking some pretty cool footage. It was fun to see that. So that was pretty cool this last week. Joe Biden and was it
Clinton? Lizzo.
And Lizzo did their campaign, which, mind you, they required ID to get into, just saying. And they raised $25 million, the Biden administration campaign for reelection. And very quietly, Donald Trump threw a pop-up fundraiser and accidentally raised over $100 million. I thought that was very interesting. Nothing in the headline news about that, but I think very telling around who has a lot of momentum behind their campaign right now.
Yeah. And
a lot of momentum.
I don't think anybody's arguing that Joe Biden is the underdog in this upcoming election at this point. He's got a really low...
I still see... It's funny. When you see on the headline news, some of his cabinet get on and go onto the mainstream news media and they get questioned, they are so in denial. They are still arguing as if it's... That's all lies.
That's their job.
No, yeah, that's true.
It's what, which is... The craziest thing is nobody has any... One of the things that's missing from a lot of people nowadays is accountability.
Yeah.
Zero accountability.
Yep.
When things are wrong, they're just wrong. I mess up. You mess up. It's just okay to be wrong on stuff. But just to blatantly lie about things and act like people are too dumb to know is really wild. Yeah, and I've been seeing Peter Ducey been... Is it Ducey? Ducey? Ducey?
Oh, yeah. For Fox.
He's been getting the spokesperson for the White House. I don't know her name.
Karine Jean-Pierre, whatever.
CJP.
Yeah, KJP.
KJP. She's been just stumbling over her words. Oh, so it's been fun to watch.
Costco is selling as much as $200 million in gold bars monthly right now. Trading now at its highest price ever is gold. Why is that? What's going on there? Is this a fad? Is there something to be said for gold continuing to still be a strong store of value?
I think that it's just gold hasn't really done a ton for the previous about 10, 11 years. The use of gold is needed, especially in the semiconductor space for AI, that we need semiconductors. So gold is a valuable metal to do that. There's scarcity to it. There's a limited supply of gold. So people like that, but it's something they can touch and actually use. And oh, my gold can be used in my watch and it's in your cars and it's in your computer. So there's all sorts of places that gold actually has, but also like applicable value. I don't know why gold and silver are necessarily going up as much as they are, but I think it's just a hedge against in case inflation. For some people, in case inflation numbers are not what people are expecting. But we're happy for a lot of our clients, we have gold. So it's a very small position, maybe 2 to 3% of their portfolio, but it's been doing very well the past couple.
Speaking of inflation, we've got CPI. Coming out tomorrow, correct?
Yep, core and CPI and core CPI come out tomorrow. Going to be a pretty choppy day in the market, I would expect. FOMC minutes also come out tomorrow. Mm-hmm. My expectation is we have a higher than 0.4 headline number and we have a 0.3 or lower core number. And that would be very important and positive. And I think that would push the likelihood of a cut in June more forward with still a long way to go to get that solidified. We're 3 weeks out from the official May meeting for the Fed. And right now it's looking like about a 98% chance of a
pause.
Yeah, and now with a 2-ish percent chance of a cut.
Now with the recent jobs report that came out, 303,000 jobs added in March, a lot of those being part-time jobs.
Part-time and government jobs. There's actually a net loss, I believe, of around 60,000 full-time jobs.
Yeah, and then I think manufacturing was zero.
Yep. So those numbers being high are not good. But then when you dig into the numbers, it's a big nothing burger. It's, the government's hiring. Oh, so if you take that out, look at how many jobs are actually created, mm-hmm. which would be low, which would be the kind of report we want to come in to indicate that inflation is likely still continuing to trend down, which we believe it is.
Now, UBS said the Federal Reserve is expected to cut interest rates 3 times this year, still with an expectation in June, and 5 more times next year. We saw with some of the data that came out over the course of the last week, the June cut probability, which was... what, mid or high 60s?
It was about, I would say, it was weird. We talked one day, it was like 53, 47 to the cut side. Then we're talking over the weekend, it's 42 to 56 to the pause side. Fast forward to today, end of market today, then when we're recording this is Tuesday, it's now like 53% chance or 56% chance, actually it's flipped, with a 42% chance of a pause and a 1.5, I believe, percent chance of a 50 basis point cut. So it's very up and down with the data right now. And it's all dependent on these little things are so and fickle, and everything that comes in is so important right now. Right now we want like bad data is good.
Yeah.
We want to show not, we don't want the stock market to flip over. We don't want it to start pulling back. That's not necessarily what has to happen. What has to happen is, hey, we're hitting the ceiling here. We don't have much room to go. Consumers are at the point where they can't spend a ton anymore. Now we need to loosen. They don't want to loosen it up when people still have this big gap. Because again, that would cause, likely what is deemed a melt up.
Yeah. Now, Jamie Dimon of JP Morgan Chase has been in the headline news a lot this week. He's somewhat of a market mover a little bit in terms of where his opinions are at.
Yep.
He recently came out and said he's got concerns about the stock market shrinking. He warned of potential 8% interest rates and a recession looming. A soft or a no landing, very unlikely, which seems like a little bit more grim and dark than he has spoken in the past about the trajectory that the economy is on.
I think he said he has a lot of opinions and they come out pretty frequently. And I think sometimes they move frequently with the market. He's been probably wrong more than he's been right because of that. But overall, he's got a good perspective on what the market does and why it does it. I think that it's pretty likely we're going to, I would say it's over an 80% chance, I think, is the consensus that we'll have a soft or no landing. And I don't know if I see the stock market shrinking because we have on the S&P 500, there's about a daily average, I think, over the last 20 days of about 10.31 billion shares purchased per day. Today, 10.31 billion shares were purchased. So that daily average was hit. I think we had like a 1.44 ratio on to one on advancing stocks versus declining stocks. So more stocks advancing than declining. So things are looking pretty good, but I think it's a lot of it's going to hinge on tomorrow being, do we get a cool core number? That's very important. And then earnings season is kicking off for the first time of the year and we're going to have financials started off. And that normally is a good catalyst if we get good financial data that the rest of the year should be positive. So that's what's at risk tomorrow. We also have PPI, I believe, on Thursday, core and headline. Maybe some crude inventory somewhere in there, which is going to be important. But the PPI core and CPI core, the I think the in focus most with very close second being the earnings data. Because if companies can continue to be profitable at the current interest rates, when it's assumed when interest rates are cut, that they'll also continue to be profitable, but just have more margin.
Yeah. Now, you talked a little bit about inflation still being something that a lot of Americans, especially middle class and the poor, are really feeling
yep.
the effects of. The typical American household would need to spend essentially $500 more a month to purchase the same goods and services as a year ago. This is a report that just came out today from Moody's. When you look at the U.S. government debt, when Trump left office, it was in the $500 billion in the U.S. government now, and this is interest payments, now we're looking at $1.1 trillion in February of 24. Ken Griffin of Citadel said it's irresponsible for the U.S. government to incur a deficit of 6.4% when unemployment is hovering around 3.75% and that we must stop borrowing at the expense of future generations.
Agreed.
And we're seeing a lot of small businesses, a lot of communities really feeling that impact, not as much at the top, but definitely in the middle class, definitely on the lower income side of things. And I saw, let me see if I can find this. So inflation is, you actually just mentioned this earlier, that small business confidence is at an 11-year low.
Yep.
And what's the sentiment behind that?
Inflation is high and affecting them. I think labor cost was the second most concerning thing. But inflation, cost of goods and services, essentially when you own a business, your COGS, which are your costs, they just inflate up and it's really hard to keep them going while maintaining then wages. Let's imagine in California, small businesses, and let's say it's a small business owner that owns a couple of McDonald's,
yep.
right? A franchisee owner. They just had to increase their payout by quite a bit. Menu prices went up at In-N-Out slightly. At McDonald's, they've gone up. And all they're going to have to do now is just say, we have to pass this straight through to the consumer because if we don't, we cannot run our business.
100%.
So McDonald's corporate is saying, you need to price your stuff up and pretty much pass that through to the state consumer because that's what they voted for.
Yeah.
And so in those states, we're going to make the consumers pay more, and they will pay more, and they're just going to complain about it. And so hopefully in the future that drives change for the legislators and type of politicians that we put in this state. But the small business confidence is waning on the fact that inflation is still pressuring. And if you look at the type of people that own small businesses, it's your neighbors. It's not these huge fat cats. It's your neighbors. It's well-off entrepreneurs or solopreneurs.
Yeah, these are not multi-gajillionaires that can insulate themselves to those types of changes, right? It hits their bottom line. It impacts their ability to make payroll and to pay their rent and to still provide a great quality service or product within the community. You look at budget retailer 99 Cents Only has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection, saying that it intends to close all of its 371 stores in the U.S. and sell off its real estate and remaining inventory. And then if you look at, I saw this post today and I went through and dug into some of these. Walmart is closing 23 stores in 8 states. Those are all blue states, by the way. Target is closing 9 stores in 4 states. Those are all blue states. Walgreens is closing 900 stores, mostly in blue states. Bed Bath & Beyond closing its remaining 360 stores. Lowe's, 50 stores. Macy's closing 150 stores. Starbucks closing 61 stores. Home Depot. This went Dollar Tree, Foot Locker, Gap, Party City, Big Lots, Burger King, Best Buy, Boston Market, Kmart, Sears, Regal Cinemas. I could go on for another 20. There are literally not just small businesses closing now.
Medium-sized businesses.
But there's medium
and large.
Some big-sized businesses.
JCPenney.
That are closing. Now, I think part of that is inflation, but many of these stores are noting that it's for the safety of their employees and because of petty crime that is not being prosecuted and crime is not crime anymore.
Yeah, in California and a lot, and in some other blue states, but there's the craziest thing is, it just, if you prosecute, I don't know if you saw that it was a school shooter. His parents got sentenced to 15 years in jail today.
Oh, wow. I didn't hear that.
Yeah. So they sentenced the parents because they found the parents liable. They just weren't parenting in that. If they would have been more involved, they would have probably had some cues and had been able to maybe stop that. So you say the consensus that I've been seeing around that is, yeah, that should happen. I don't know if I think that or not, but I definitely agree that if it was the standard that parents would be liable for their children like they are in a lot of other situations, but that specific one, you'd see a lot less school shootings.
Yeah.
Because parents would be way more involved in their children's lives. I think the same can be said on the other side as well. If we have more involvement in, I don't know how I'm trying to say this. We have more involvement with everybody in going forward. We shouldn't have some of the problems that we're having right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that accountability, like we were talking about earlier, is huge. So I'm hoping that long-term, there's more people that are involved. And I think things like that with the parents having to have liability for that, I think that's very important. That'll push through to generations as a positive.
Yeah, I mean, because when we think about small businesses are the backbone of America.
Agreed.
They're the backbone of our communities. They're the backbone of many of our states. They are the backbone of America.
Small cap. That's why when we do market data, if you watch a bull run, small cap, small companies, bigger than our mom and pop, but small companies are always an indicator of a positive market cycle. Why? Because people spend at small businesses more frequently than they go to the big ones, minus like Starbucks or your McDonald's or the Amazons. Yeah. But a lot of the businesses around here,
I love patronizing the small businesses.
We love to go to Red's Pizza, and I guarantee you don't have a Red's Pizza in your neighborhood, or at least not ours. Yeah. I don't like to go to Extreme Jump Zone. That's why I messed up my ankle. But we have all these local businesses that we like to support. On top of, we have our big boxes, our Targets, our whatever. So the main thing, the point is, small businesses are indicative of a healthy overall economy, because if the little guy can make it, the big guys are probably doing good as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to say it trickles down, but I think in business, it definitely does. The bigger businesses are way more insulated to the problems. So if small companies are doing very well, it's highly likely that when you look up the chain, you're going to see a bigger and bigger spread on success as you move up.
Yeah. And when you see those big names that I just went down the list on consolidating. What do you think is happening to the small businesses? There are, I know a lot of small business owners that are struggling.
We know.
Right now.
Yeah. We know they're closing or they're cutting back their employment significantly. And then business owners are having to go in and actually literally run their businesses, not hire people to help run their business because they can't afford it.
And a lot of this doesn't have to do with, are they running the right marketing campaign, right? Do they get enough customers coming in their door? Yeah, sure. That argument can always be made. But at the end of the day, why we talk a little bit about politics on here is because policy matters. If you've got homeless people sitting in front of your store, going to the bathroom and hassling your patrons and making your employees or your customers feel unsafe, or actually coming in and stealing stuff and walking out, that impacts the ability for people to create and serve value to the community and have a real business model that's sustainable. Policy matters. Jamie Dimon, in his 2024 annual letter to shareholders, said that he basically went on to condemn the nation's establishment and the Biden administration for failing to protect the American dream. When you think about all of those big corporate boxes consolidating, let alone all of the small businesses that are struggling, you look at the report, 11-year low in terms of small business confidence, and you hear the Biden administration getting up on mainstream media talking about Bidenomics and how strong the economy is and how confident people are in their administration, it's a farce.
It's a lie.
And when you look at their ability to, and their establishment failing to protect the American dream and the economic opportunities for ordinary Americans, he goes on to say, from my point of view, our highly charged emotional and political domestic issues are a centered view. It's a centrist view.
Yeah.
They're highly charged emotional and political issues that are centered around, one, immigration and a lack of border security, and two, the fraying of the American dream, particularly for low-income and rural Americans who feel left behind amid the growing wealth and prosperity of others around them. Mm-hmm. He goes on to say, I believe that many affected Americans are not angry at hardworking, law-abiding immigrants, and in fact, acknowledge the critical role immigrants play and continue to play in building this wonderful country. Rather, they're angry that America has not implemented proper border control and immigration policies. It is astounding that many in Congress know what to do and want to do it, but are simply unable to pass legislation because of partisan politics.
Yep.
Congress did come close to a few occasions, and I hope they keep trying. But he went on to talk more about this. And it's just interesting when you look at, I saw an interesting statistic on what Trump, where is it at? He went on to basically ask, I forget, it was like 8.6, here we go. Donald Trump requested $8.6 billion to build the border wall of the United States to protect our country. The Democrats fought against it and they stopped it with Joe Biden's help. The day he came in, he undid everything that Trump had essentially put in place for the border. And now for the last 3 years, we have given Ukraine more than $85 billion to protect their borders.
Yep. And I just saw today, I believe there's a push for a partisan bill to stop funding for Ukraine. I saw that.
Oh, I just saw an emergency $113 million in aid pass to go over to Ukraine. It's like the never ending.
I think though they're going to put a bill and say, hey, we got to stop doing this. We can't be spending like, or what did I hear? If we're going to spend this much here, we have to spend at least this much somewhere else before we do that. We have to justify the sending money over there by spending money here first.
Listen, essentially what I see and why, again, I've never been the biggest fan of Trump, but I'm behind the dude 100% now because of what he's fighting against and his policy and how it actually played out and what it did for America.
Yeah,
and I am all for pro-American policy.
Agreed.
And Biden's plan for winning in November is buying votes with taxpayer money and calling it student loan forgiveness. I forget what they did today.
Did you see Speaker Mike Johnson's post on that?
No, I didn't. What did he put out?
He said
he's catching some heat right now.
Yeah, he said, but it's really funny that the Democrats and Joe Biden keep trying to lie to the American people and say that there's canceling of student debt. There is no such thing as canceling of student debts. The Supreme Court already ruled he could not. So he is simply transferring it to the national debt, were hardworking Americans, many of them who have paid off their student loans or paid for college out of pocket, are now going to be burdened with additional taxes to foot that bill.
Yeah. I mean, he announced on Monday his plans to cancel student debt for more than 30 million Americans by this fall. The plans, which the Democratic president is set to detail in Madison, Wisconsin this week, include canceling up to $20,000 of accrued and capitalized interest for borrowers, regardless of their income. And so when you look at what they're doing and who they're pandering to, one, I think more people are waking up to it and starting to go, this is not right.
100%.
But then when you think about the border and it being wide open and you got 7+ million people coming in, and now they're not requiring, he's issuing an executive order demanding 600 federal agencies serve as a part of the Democratic GOTV machine and calling it promoting access to voting, which is essentially opposing voter ID and signature verification measures by calling it Jim Crow 2.0. And so let me see if I
he's
can
doing
go down.
All this. The other thing that he's going to lose is a ton of corporate support, because another thing that just was announced today, it was part of the Inflation Reduction Act, the IRA Act that was passed. And one of the things was a 1% corporate tax on stock buybacks of over $1 million. And there's been hundreds of millions of dollars and retroactive to January 2023. So you want to see corporate money, but they're... I highly doubt corporations are going to say, wow, we just got taxed an additional $90, $100, $200 million. It sounds little, but buybacks are a huge part. So that's the total of a lot of corporations probably. There's an extra $100 million getting taxed just because the Biden administration decided we need to pay a 1% tax on stock buybacks, which actually help drive wealth down because we're buying the stock. It makes the price go higher. People generate wealth from that. They're going to punish us for that. We're not going to put our money into that person. So yeah. I think another thing that is not yet to be seen is how much corporate money he had in his first run and he's not going to have in his second, because he keeps poking the bear in all the wrong areas and pandering to a base that is not the majority.
Yeah, 100%. And going back to the voter ID issues, Elon Musk made this, it almost makes fraud impossible to detect when you don't ask for ID. And when you think about 42 out of 50 states in the United States do not require a photo ID to vote. And then the other states that do, the Biden Department of Justice is actually suing those states requiring IDs to vote to make it so they don't require it. Now, when you go down the list, and Elon Musk posts this on a tweet the other day, of the countries that require a photo ID to vote, you name any big, prominent world power.
Developed country.
Developed country in the entire world, they require an ID to vote.
I think China even requires a freaking ID to vote.
UK, Italy, Chile, Spain, China, Malta, Brazil, Israel, Latvia, Russia, France, Mexico, Austria, Ireland, Poland, Greece, Croatia, Finland, Estonia, Belgium. It goes all the way down. And every single big country you would think does.
Well,
it's just very odd, right? That they're so, not only are they, do they have an opinion on it, but now they're suing.
You can't even buy a fucking plane ticket without an ID. So it's just like, it's really, argument is crazy.
It's head scratching
to me. Well, we all know they're just never going to say, the more people that they get into to vote without an ID, they're going to try to get those people. They're going to try to trick those people into voting for them. And that's their game plan, is to cheat their way into a next. I don't think it's going to work.
I sure as hell hope not.
I just don't think it's going to work.
Because knowing what we know now of how much support, and I'm talking like people that were never Trumpers,
The Rock.
I would never, ever even consider. Yeah, there you go. The Rock and Biden.
Dwayne Johnson. I'm not supporting Biden this year. Yeah, he didn't say he was supporting Trump. He did not.
But I
think it's implied that it's if there's two candidates on the ticket and one is Joe Biden, he's going to vote for the other candidate.
And you can go down the list, right? What was his name? Michael Rapaport. He was like, I'll punch Trump in the face. Like, that guy's a scumbag, this and that. He was like, I was wrong.
And he said,
I am going to vote for Trump because I hate what I'm seeing on the other side. And I think there's so many people that feel that way. Not because we're making this about politics, we're making this about the policy that the politicians are enacting that impact our lives, that impact our wealth, that impact our businesses, our families, the safety of our communities. there's some real issues that people are waking up to and going, this isn't about mean tweets and him saying things that I don't necessarily like how he said or how he came about doing what he did. This is about how this is showing up in my life today.
And affecting me not only probably emotionally and mentally, but also affecting me monetarily.
Yeah.
And that goes back to our small business optimism.
100%. So as we are seeing a lot of politics and volatility play out because of the year that we're in right now, which how choppy is it going to be going into the election?
So it's always the election night and the election. There's always some choppiness. It really depends how close the race is. So if there's a big spread on the race and it's Donald Trump that's going to win, you will see a wonderful market. I think the market will still be okay if Joe Biden wins, but it's not going to go on a tear like it would if Trump wins. Because if Trump wins, they're going to start, the market is forward looking. So it's going to start pricing in tax cuts, corporate tax cuts, all the stuff that normally gets the market moving. And the left has been convinced that corporations making profits, sometimes they're egregious, I will admit, but corporations making profits are bad. And that's a lie pushed by the left. Corporations, when they do a good job making a profit and they're a good corporation, which that's the majority of them, it's not the majority bad and some good, it's the opposite. They provide jobs. Those jobs provide benefits. Those benefits provide wealth. That wealth raises families and spreads and so on and so forth. That's the benefit of having a nice open economy with low taxes, with low government involvement. Let the market play out. Let it tell us what it wants. It will do that by demand and by pricing things. I'm hopeful that we can get that in, that Trump will win in November. And right now, I've not seen one poll that was saying, I haven't seen one poll that says Biden will win. That's not all the right ones say Trump will win. All the far left ones say Biden will win. But if you go to the ones that are like, hey, we're going to do true, it's like Trump winning by a spread of +7. That's a very big spread. That's not seven votes. That's percent of the votes. 7% of the US population, that'd be like 21 million votes. That's a lot of more people voting for one person than not. So fingers crossed. But I would recommend and hope everybody has figured out by this point, I would vote with your pocketbook for politicians. Politicians on both sides of the street suck. So I would say whichever one pays you the most and is not a bad person, got to balance those. I guess with Trump, he's not a great person, but he's also not a terrible person. Just probably wouldn't be my friend. Vote for policy. What policy is going to be best for everybody as a whole? Probably right now, not Joe Biden.
Speaking of policy that impacts you at the pump, is the United States Department of Energy abruptly canceled two major purchases to refill the country's strategic petroleum reserve with more than 3 million barrels of oil on Wednesday, basically saying it was too expensive. He drained all of it and then said, oh, it's too expensive to refill it, and canceled the plans to refill a very important, very important.
For national security, it's very important. If we go to war, we have to have a crap load of oil. Like a lot.
And what's going on right now globally?
There's a lot of geopolitical risk.
A lot of conflict.
Yeah, we're the largest producer of oil in the world, the United States is. A lot of people don't know that, but we are. We should take our oil, barrel it up, put it in the reserve. We should have as much and more than we need, probably way more than our ratio says, 2 to 3 times it. And then we can sell our oil back and we can do that and help other countries. But in the meantime, I think we have 7 days. I literally think we have 7 days.
That's scary.
And they base that on how many barrels of oil are on average are consumed in the U.S. So that's really low. It may be higher than that, but I think when I was reading the article on it that I read that it was a 7-day supply currently.
Now, is there any, obviously I know I'm seeing it back at the pump.
When that goes low, the price gets high because there's scarcity.
Yeah. And mine cost me $100+ to fill up my Tahoe every time I go to the pump.
It's cost me almost $100 to fill up
the Babylon. See, and so I can only imagine the family that has got 5 kids and they got a Suburban and they're spending $100, $120, $130
2 to 3 times a week.
Yeah. Because they're carting kids around to sporting and they're going to the grocery store and spending $400 versus $200. Like that all adds up.
Yep. You go to Costco, a family of four average is spending, I think when I saw it, $470 at the cash register versus 2019, they were spending about $271. So it's almost double. That's crazy.
It's a lot.
Are you interested in boosting your income by an extra $50,000 this year? If so, you're going to love what I've got in store for you. I am beyond excited to officially announce an incredible opportunity to join me in my exclusive mastermind, which will include myself and 25 other hand-selected investors who are actively pursuing commercial real estate in 2024 and want to be held accountable to making sure they buy their first or their next commercial real estate investment property that will net them a minimum of $50,000 a year. This mastermind group will not only teach you how to do that, how to find, how to analyze, how to structure and buy these types of commercial real estate investment properties, but you'll also have an opportunity to be a part of an intimate group of high achievers that are going to take your network and your resources to a whole nother level. But here's the catch. Like I mentioned before, this is exclusive. We're only selecting 25 ambitious individuals for our founding members group who are serious and ready to take that next step in their commercial real estate investing journey. So if you are ready to increase your passive income by at least $50,000 in the next year with commercial real estate investing, then this is your moment. These spaces are gonna fill up fast. And trust me, this is the one and only time to be a founding member, which comes with some pretty special benefits. So head over to myfirst50k.com and submit your application now. Again, that's myfirst50k.com. You can head over there, check out the program, see everything that it entails, submit your application to join, and I can't wait to connect with you soon.
Now we're looking at medium income, 401k balances in the US by age bracket. In the 20s, the average is 16,100. 30s is 51,700. 40s is 115,850. 50s is just shy of 200,000.
Those are all way too low.
And you want to hear an even more interesting statistic, which shows me if you're listening to the show and you are tapped into the right conversations, you got a plan, you're working that plan, and you are spending your time, energy, attention, resources in the right areas, and you do that consistently over time, you're going to win. That being said, I saw this. Americans spent over $118 billion on lottery tickets last year, more than they spent on movies, books, concerts, sports tickets, and investments combined per NerdWallet.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. People are obsessed with instant gratification, which is weird because I get gratification off of investing. I don't know how people don't, because I know when I invest those dollars into my brokerage account, that is like literally time in a capsule that I can, like, I would never be able to get back somewhere else, but now I just set it up for myself that I'm going to have it.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. And when you think about retirement, when you start earlier and you do the right things,
you got to put away less.
You are, exactly. There's less pressure. Mm-hmm. But now you look at the people who are like, oh, I'll figure it out later. Kicking the can down the road. I'll figure it out later. Instant gratification now. The trip, the car, the boat, whatever it may be, the bad investments, the bad debt, right? The typical person now believes that they need $1.5 million to retire comfortably per Bloomberg, which is 17 times more than the $88,400 savers have set aside on average.
Yeah, and they need more than that. You probably need double that.
On, would you say like on the $88,000 or $3
million? $3 million.
$3 million, yeah. To retire comfortably.
Easy. Yeah. Because that's about $3 million is about $150,000 a year passive income starting.
At what? At a what percent return?
That's a 5% distribution rate.
Okay. And that's just buying an annuity?
No, that's just putting money in the stock market.
Starting them and then having
Depending on annuities, the guaranteed payout rate you can get if you want like an increasing income annuity, which is what I normally use, they start up between 4 and 4.5%, sometimes as high as 5 for single individuals. You can get SPIAs, immediate annuities, that are paying as high as 13, 14%, but we don't normally use those because the payments don't ever increase. They stay level. So they work really good in the early part of retirement, but then the back part of retirement, your income is the exact same as 24 years ago. And so that normally would eat away at your purchasing power.
Right.
But 5%-ish distribution rate, we increase that distribution by about 2% per year. Same with annuities. And that is a successful, truly passive. Real estate is the second, I think, most passive form of income. You do have to manage it. You can, just like with real estate, how you can hire a property manager, you can hire a financial advisor, and then it's pretty laissez-faire. It's mailbox money. Both of them, you pay a portion of your, I think, your rent, right? Normally it's what, 15%, 15, 20%?
Of property managers?
Property managers.
It's anywhere, depending on the type of asset and how management intensive it is, it's 5 to 12, 15%.
So 5 to 15, depending on your asset. And then you're paying an investment advisor. I charge between 0.55 all the way up to 0.85, and other people charge 1, 1.5, 2%. That's what we are doing. And so you don't have to think about or do anything. It costs to do that. But the benefit of it is truly having a retirement, whether it be through real estate or through stocks or whatever.
Really both.
Hopefully both. It's a good balance in retirement to have. I tell a lot of people that I see a lot of people retiring. One of the spouses gets a real estate license, does that part-time. Now they're full-time real estate investors. So they can take advantage of that for real estate investing and help reduce their taxes in retirement, all while increasing their income the whole time. So there's all sorts of stuff you can do with real estate and in conjunction with your traditional investments that ultimately is better than just doing one and not doing the other.
Yeah. Now, if you guys have a plan and you're not 100% sure of what the plan is doing or how it's working for you, or you haven't talked with your financial advisor around what their fees are and you don't understand that, one of the amazing things that Ryan and his team do for all our Million of Mindcast listeners is a free financial x-ray. So if you want to take advantage of that, you want to connect with him and his team, the easiest way to do that, text the word x-ray to 844-447-1555. That'll get you guys connected with Ryan. Now, as we wrap up today, I did say that I would promise you a guaranteed way to become a millionaire. And the easiest way, most proven, bulletproof way to become a millionaire in 2024 is to get elected to Congress, start doing insider trading, and profit. I thought that was funny. I saw a little meme today and it went crazy. I saw there was like 300,000 shares of this thing.
Yeah, because it's true. It's unfortunate that it's true, but it's true.
It is. It is very unfortunate. As we wrap up on that, any updates around that bill that you know wasn't going to make it very far, huh? Dead on arrival?
Those motherfuckers. It's Republicans and Democrats.
Oh, yeah.
Let me just tell you, the worst person is a Republican.
Yep.
Is it Tuber? Tommy Tuber?
Tuberville or whatever. Let me see. I'll pull him up. If you go to Unusual Whales, he tracks all of this. Unusual Whales Twitter.
Never mind. We have a Dem on the top.
Oh, wow. The Dem.
Who is that?
That is Brian Higgins.
Brian Higgins.
209% outperformance of the S&P.
Wow. Honestly, Brian Higgins, 844-447-1555. Hit my line. I need to talk to you, brother.
For real. And then the next three are Republicans. And then the next two after that are Democrats.
Pretty much anybody beating. So we tend to do better than the market for a lot of our growth-focused investors or more aggressive investors because you're taking more risks than the market. So you're generally going to get a higher rate of return than that. More downside, but more upside long-term. People that beat the market by 30, 40, 50%, I am telling you, unless they're using options or leverage or something, that would raise a red flag to me. It's statistically so hard to do that without cheating. It's nearly impossible. I'll pass it back to Matt because I think he has a Nancy Pelosi update.
No, I just saved this meme. I was going to send it out, but it was on April Fool's Day. And it said Nancy Pelosi raises $200 million in early stage fund. U.S. politician Nancy Pelosi announces a $200 million funding round for her early stage fund called Nancy Ventures. The fund secured big checks from LPs, including Ohio Teachers Pension, the EIF, the Rwanda Rebels Association, and of course, the Biden Family Trust LLC. I just thought that was funny,
right?
That's
amazing.
She has been so scrutinized for blatantly doing it right in front of our eyes, making trades literally days or hours before certain policy or news headline breaks around certain things that obviously either shoot a stock way up or way down. And oh, would you believe that? Her position is perfectly placed in order to get all of the benefits and rewards of that. So again, I just think
incredible.
at the end of the day, if you're unable to be the Nancy Pelosi, if you're unable to go and get into Congress and do insider trading, which at the end of the day, you don't want to sell your soul to the devil, right? You want to build wealth the right way, the sustainable way. And everything that goes into that, who you become, what you learn, the relationships you develop, that's the real reward, right? Yes, the outcomes of becoming financially free and growing your net worth and having all these assets is great. But who you become in that process, nobody can just hand that over to you. You have to go and earn that. You have to go and get that. And ultimately, if you unlock that, you can pass that on to your family and the future generations that you want to serve and support and to make a difference for. And that's what I think the real reward is. At least that's my prescription of how I'm going about building my wealth, doing it the right way. Yeah, you're going to lose. Don't get me wrong. Losing is a part of the process. Mm-hmm. And it's the people who continue to take those learning lessons and just put them back to work and play the long game that are ones that end up winning long term. So we appreciate you guys for tuning in each and every week. This wraps up another episode of Money Moves. Don't forget to check out MillionaireMindcast.com for all the great stuff, tools, resources we have for you guys in the store to help you on your wealth building journey. Of course, if you enjoy anything that we talk about, all we ask, the price of admission. Just leave a review. Share this with somebody. Tell us what you like. Share it with a friend, a family member, somebody that you know would benefit from being a part of these conversations. Because really, you grow into the conversations and the relationships and the environments that you surround yourself with. So if you want to get better at money, you want to get better at wealth building, just stay tuned on Money Moves. With that being said, keep investing in yourself and your wealth on your march to a million and beyond. We appreciate you guys. We'll see you next week's episode.
Cheers, y'all.
Well, that wraps up this week's episode of Money Moves. Be sure to tune in next week for more news and updates. And if you got some value from today's show, all we ask is that you take 2 minutes and leave a review in iTunes, where by doing so, you're going to get entered in to win a $100 gift card. Also, don't forget to take advantage of Ryan's free financial x-ray on your investment portfolio. And to do so, all you have to do is text the word x-ray to 844-447-1555. What we have found by offering this out is most people have no idea what they're being charged from a fee perspective, or really in most cases, overcharged, and whether or not their current investment and financial plan is actually aligned with what they're trying to accomplish. And this is something that Ryan and his amazing team do for all of our listeners for free. So be sure to take them up on that. Again, that's x-ray, one word, 844-447-1555. Also, if you're an accredited investor and you're not on my deals list, be sure to text the word deals to 844-447-1555 to be notified of the private investment offerings my team and I put out. And last, don't forget to check out all the amazing products and resources that we offer to our Millionaire Mindcast family at MillionaireMindcast.com. Whether that's one-on-one coaching with me, mastermind events, calculators, the Rich Life Planner for those looking to take their goal setting and productivity to the next level. We've got all kinds of great and valuable tools available at MillionaireMindcast.com. With that being said, that's all for this week. Until next week's episode, keep investing in yourself and your wealth on your march to a million and beyond. Cheers, my friends.